I actually think it's the biggest hole in our business is what I call that warm period. If you haven't got a follow-up system and you know they're not selling, it's kind of a waste of time. You're just hoping they'll remember you. And most of the time they don't. For me, blanket marketing is the easiest way to get people to unsubscribe. Getting involved is fantastic, but you need to be involved. You need to be at the awards nights. You need to be a member of the club. I created raving fans early in my day and lost contact with them. And to me, that whole entire transaction was a complete waste of time when I couldn't utilize those relationships and done so much more with them.
Welcome to another episode of Thought Leaders. I'm Samantha McLean, and today I'm talking with someone who's identified what he believes is the biggest hole in our industry, and he's built a system to fix it. Adam Joske is a multi-award-winning Melbourne real estate leader with over 25 years in the industry. From winning REIV Residential Salesperson of the Year in 2015 to spearheading Bell Property's expansion into Victoria, Adam consistently broke records through what others might call old-fashioned relationship building, but he calls it systematic client nurturing. Now operating as a freelance consultant and coach, Adam works intensively with just a handful of clients at a time, helping them double their income by mastering what he calls the warm list, those prospects who say they'll sell in 6 months to 2 years. This is the period when 90% of agents drop off, but Adam's systematic approach to staying in touch has helped him build a database of 4,000 contacts with 90% accuracy back when he was selling. So today we're going to dive into all of that and more. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Samantha. And I'm assuming that you read my bio, because if you did that off the top of your head, I'd be really impressed.
Well, I have an assistant. It's called ChatGPT Deep Research. Right. So if you'd like the 20-page dossier it came up with on you, I'm happy to send it to you after the show.
I'm scared. But I don't think I want to see that.
I promise you it was all flattering. But you and I have talked about this nurture problem before, which is why I want to get you on Thought Leaders. And there's a lot of people in the industry. I mean, you know, like Mark McLeod, he's often said the real estate industry doesn't have a lead generation problem. It has a lead nurture problem. And you think the same thing, that there's a massive hole in our industry around agents trying to chase their next listing. But what I want to know from you is, take me to the light bulb moment during your selling career. Like, when did you realize that it was that period of 6 months to 2 years nurturing was actually your biggest opportunity that most agents were missing? When did you get that?
Okay, so look, when I was selling full time, I actually think it's the, and I've spoken to you about this before, but I actually think it's the biggest hole in our business is what I call that warm period. So I think there are agents who are very good at their hot chase list, which might be people who are going to transact in 0 to 6 months, call it. And everyone, the hot list is different for everyone, but let's call it 0 to 6 months. They may have 20 or 30 people on it that they're speaking to regularly. Some people are okay with long-term database, but I think where the opportunity is that warm list, which, as I say, maybe 6 months to two years. And when did I realize that? So when I was selling full-time, I was up regularly against a competitor. Let's just call him Marcus. His name's not Marcus, but we'll call him Marcus. And when I was up against Marcus, Marcus was a really good agent. And in the lounge room, he was a really good presenter. And I reckon I was probably 50-50 to get a listing. So every time we went to get an appraisal, if they were selling shortly in the next 3 months or so, I knew I had my work cut out. Whenever I went there and they said, look, Adam, I'm going to sell in 12 months' time, I knew I'd beat Marcus every single time, because Marcus was a typical real estate agent where he'd call and chase and, you know, for 3-4 months he's on the phone, he's pushing, he's sending stuff. And then it's almost like at the 4-month mark, he'd just disappear. And the vast majority of agents that I work with, they disappear in that period and they never speak to the client again. And that's when I get excited, because I knew that Marcus would, I knew almost to the day when he'd drop off. He's using his diary, he's setting reminders, but there's no actual system. So in my business, I spend a lot of time actually setting that up for people. And I think that if they can master that 6 months to 2 years, that warm period, agents that I've worked with have doubled or tripled their business without doing any more work.
How did you tell that he'd gone into witness protection or something, as far as the client had, like, was there a giveaway or something like that, you know, that other agents should look for, that, you know, that someone's given up the chase?
Well, I just speak to the client. I mean, once you've listed the property, your relationship changes and you can have more real conversations. So, you know, I'd say to them, you know, how was Marcus in the chase? Oh, look, he, you know, communicated with us. He sent us a lot of information and market reports and spoke to us about tradespeople and referred a solicitor. And but then he sort of disappeared over time. And that, like I say, I reckon that's common of 90% of agents that I've worked with.
Even now with the agents that you're coaching, what makes you confident that this systematic approach, and maybe we could go into it a little bit, means that you can consistently beat presenters like Marcus, if that's what we're going to call him.
We'll call him, yes.
Who are like strong at the initial appointment, but, you know, but weak at the long game.
Yeah, so I think, look, it's a matter of, look, the reason I set up a system is because it happens to me all the time. And I got to the point where I'd go in an appraisal and if they told me, even on the phone before the appointment, that they're not going to sell for a year or 14 months or 10 months, and I actually say this to agents, like, why go? If you haven't got a follow-up system and you know they're not selling, it's kind of a waste of time going in the first place. You're just hoping they'll remember you. And most of the time they don't. What I did was I set up a system where there's automatic communication going out, but tailored to what their needs are. So it's very much like a one-page spreadsheet and with tips and pointers and prompts on what you can send these people. And I think with AI, it's actually gone to the next level because we can talk about, okay, well, do these people need a solicitor? You can actually set up, you know, reminders and tasks for those things to happen. And really, it's about after 24 months, it's about having 24 good communication points versus Marcus, who has dropped off after 6 weeks. And what we do is we set up a 24-month program if it takes 24 months for that person to make a decision. So there's 24 touch points, which is a mixture of phone, email, text, and post.
Okay, so walk me through this legendary database system that you used to use when you were selling. How did you maintain such data accuracy over a large number of contacts? Because 4,000 contacts is quite a lot. That's, you know, more than the usual, I would say, I don't know, how many do they recommend in a farm area these days? About 1,200, something like that?
Look, most good farm areas are anything sort of 1,000 to 3,000. My farm area was 3,000. I actually started with 1,500. Got that really humming. And to sort of answer your question in two parts, I really sort of categorized and tagged every single person in there, literally went house by house by house and said, okay, is this a weatherboard home? Is it a brick home? Put the land size in, beds, bathrooms, car. I did that about 20 years ago. So it was very, very manual. And it was literally me driving past every property, taking photos of it, trying to investigate the information, you know, doing a letter drop, hoping that someone will call me because then I can get the phone number, email address, put it in there, attach it to the property. So this, for me, 20 years ago when I set this up, was a very tedious program. Now, with tools, CoreLogic, things like ID for me, using AI to identify certain types of properties, which I haven't done, but I'm sure you can do it. And I need to think about how you could do that, but it's so exciting what I'm sure you can do now. Being able to build a database of 1,500 in a matter of, you know, weeks or months, then to answer your second part of your question, I built that 1,500 and then built another 1,500 a few years later because I was able to manage it. I see a lot of agents having too many people that they're nurturing. They don't really know the people. They might have 20,000 people that they're touching once a year, rather than call it 1,500 that they're touching 12 or 20 or 30 times a year. Yeah, so I essentially had 4,000. I had 3,000 in my patch. The other 1,000 was organically someone in the patch referring me a listing somewhere else or someone, you know, getting a resale for a property somewhere else.
So during that time, did you have a newsletter at all that you used to send to your clients?
Yep, so I did a monthly newsletter and... It's actually, let me rephrase. It was more like a market report. I don't personally, I think, I believe that people just want to know the stats. So my newsletter or my monthly report had all the sales for the suburb for the last month, some very, very visual, some graphs, some stats, you know, what Elsternwick's doing this month versus the corresponding month last year, you know, that sort of information. So very, very visual, very numbers orientated. I personally don't believe in newsletters that say, you know, welcome Joan, our new receptionist, to our office. I don't personally believe that the public care. So for me, it was about educating the market on what's going on. That would go out to all my 4,000 people.
Yeah, that's super interesting, because I'm interested in this whole thing at the moment, because, you know, there are people that sort of are in the camp of, like, let's send a newsletter every week. There are people that just send their just listed. And your market report, it has all the information in it. A lot of agents will say to me stuff like, you know, I don't want to report on other people's sales. So what was your logic in including everything?
Because I wouldn't put the agent with it. I want to be the advisor for the suburb that local homeowners can rely on and say, okay, well, you know, there were 30 sales in the suburb. I'm the one who's informing you about these sales. I think maybe selectively, if we'd made a lot of them, and maybe I'd put the agent in there, but usually I wouldn't put the agent in. I'm being the advisor for the suburb. But I'll tell you now, for agents, that market reports now can be so much easier. I mean, I did an exercise the other day and it was actually incredible. I went to realestate.com and I put Elsternwick in there, and I asked for Elsternwick snapshot. Elsternwick's a suburb in Victoria, and you can do this for any suburb through realestate.com, and it gives you, you know, average sale price for units, for houses, days on market. I literally cut and pasted, or cut that information, put it into ChatGPT, and I said, give me a full market report on Elsternwick. I only want it 500 words long. Don't make it look like AI has done it. And a few other amazing prompts. And it gave me the best market report in about 5 minutes, that way better than anything that I've done before. And I asked it to tidy up, and I asked it to be a bit more property management focused, and then a bit more sales focused. But that whole exercise was, I'm probably exaggerating at 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's I've actually done it. I've tried it. It's pretty good. The same thing that I used to deep research you, actually. Deep research the suburb, give me any council DAs, give me, like, you know, all of those sorts of things. It's just, give me any the local coffee shops that have opened, any development going on, you know, like, I know everything about Hunters Hill in New South Wales right about now.
So but, easy. Yeah.
I know. If you're not doing that out there, like, you know, you're missing a huge trick. That's across the whole suburb, but I'm just wondering, in terms of the nurture plan, did you use any segmenting on your database so that you could send, you know, different types of targeted communication, like, throughout the month? And, you know, what did that look like?
Yeah. So look, this was the big thing for me, and this is the thing that I set up for with my coaching clients today. And I touched on earlier, you know, for me, blanket marketing is the easiest way to get people to unsubscribe. And to me, blanket marketing is, you've just listed a two-story townhouse for $2 million and you send it to people who've got a $400,000 one-bedroom apartment, a just listed or a just sold correspondence. I'm a firm believer in, if you send people relevant information that's relevant for them, they'll be interested in it, they'll engage in it, they'll remember you when they're going to sell or move. So for me, it's what I do on a daily basis is help people actually put the information in there about what type of property they own. So then when we list a two-story townhouse, we can easily say, okay, let's send an EDM to only people who live in Elsternwick, for example, and only those people who have a townhouse, and only those people who have minimum three bedrooms and two car parks, and it needs to be two-story. And then we might even go one step further. If you're in a beachside location, you might say, and it must be within 3 minutes walk of the beach. Now, rather than blanket marketing 3,000 people, we may only be sending an EDM to 200 people out of our 4,000, but those 200 appreciate it. Those 200 respond. We start a dialogue together. It builds the relationship. And then in 5 years, 10 years time, you're just going to be there.
Yeah.
Look, when I did that, Sam, it was a very manual process. I mean, the clients I work with today, it's so much easier. It's about putting that information in, drawing on different, you know, CoreLogic, other sources, ID for me, as I mentioned earlier, which is fantastic. And then calling and verifying, which you should be doing as part of your prospecting program anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you, like, you know, because I know with your market report and stuff like that, there's a lot of information that you could share with people. How do you decide what information is valuable to share with people and what isn't?
I believe, rightly or wrongly, but my belief is that people just want to know facts and figures and stats and graphs and where their property sits in comparison to what's going on out there.
So you're telling me no recipes, no beef bourguignon or any of that sort of stuff?
No, I think that's been done to death. I think that people don't care. And like I said yesterday, yep. You know, I see news that is where people, you know, welcome their new property manager and it's so-and-so's birthday this month. And look, we're not rock stars. We're just business people. We're not celebrities. I don't think we're that interesting. And that's why I say my belief is give everyone the sale prices for the area. You know, they're going to look at it. You know, give them information that's relevant for them if they've got a two-story townhouse. Some market trends, you know, how's the market going? I mean, I get excited looking at a graph over the last 24 months and seeing how property prices have changed just in that period. It's just a short visual, but it tells me a story. So, and now using AI to be able to create those newsletters, let's not call them newsletters, let's call them market reports and suburb reports. It's so easy to do.
Yeah, absolutely. If I went out to my letterbox right now, I'd still have like, you know, half a dozen flyers in there from different agents around the place. And I can guarantee you that they all look the same apart from the branding, like nothing really changes there. What sort of marketing do you think actually works for agents? Like, do you still need to do everything, or, you know, are you more in the camp of do one thing well?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm very much an advocate for owner space. You know, is it your farm area? Is it two-story townhouses in your suburb? But be an expert in something and let the public know that you're an expert. I'll give you an example. I was working recently with a client, Ron, and, you know, Ron is a 60-year-old agent, been in the industry for 25, 30 years, nicest guy on the planet. Like, he's the guy that you speak to and you just love straight away. And, you know, all this do is start talking. And Ron's a gorgeous guy. And I said to Ron, and Ron's always looking for new people. So Ron's always looking at sponsoring the footy club. He's letter dropping, you know, pays a fortune for letter drops, gets them professionally done and then dropped. Social media. And I said to Ron, who's lovable Ron, I said to him, how many sales have you made in your career? And he said, probably 500 in my 25, 30 year career. And I said, so you've got 500 buyers and 500 sellers that have actually transacted and done business with you. I said, how many of those love you? He said, oh, all of them love me. And I said, how many of those do you actually stay in contact with? And he said to me, oh, there's probably 100, 150 that know me. The rest wouldn't know me anymore. I've just dropped off over the years. I might have sold something to them 20 years ago, spoken to them for a couple of years, and then they've dropped off the. And I said to him, what would happen if you just communicated with those 1,000 people? I said to him, how many of those sell every year? And he said, probably 10% sell every year. So, you know, if he just communicated with those 1,000 people really well, there's 100 sales a year that he's potentially going to get. So what I end up doing was I work very closely with Ron on re-communicating or reconnecting with those 1,000 people who he's done business with, who love and trust him, rather than him trying to find new people all the time. So the work that I've done with Ron is not on building a patch. It's not on a letter dropping campaign, a social media campaign. For Ron, given his age profile, it's about let's reconnect with these people on a world-class level. Apologise, we haven't communicated better up until now. And I'd like to be your agent ongoing. And Ron knows now if he just nurtures those 1,000, we've been talking about how to do that, that's all he needs. That might be, you know, 50 to 100 listings a year. He's very happy with that. So for me, to answer your question, Sam, it's about finding one thing and being absolute world-class at it. You know, for him, it's past buyers, past sellers. For someone new, it might be getting 1,000 homeowners in a particular suburb or patch and nurturing those. Someone else I've worked with recently, it was an older lady, and she's fantastic with older people. So we've actually got her researching and working with all the aged care facilities in her suburb and being the go-to person. So every time someone goes to bring mum or dad into the aged care to interview them, they connect that person with Janine as the agent to look after these people. And she's now educated herself on how all that works. So that's her one thing that she's owning, that's that space she's owning.
Yeah, I love that because it sort of makes everything easy. Like if you know who you are and who your ideal client is, it makes everything easier, you know, in terms of the marketing. You can actually speak directly to someone rather than sort of putting a generic flyer in the letterbox.
Right. And people end up calling you because they think, well, who's the expert in two-story townhouses? Who's the expert in, you know, aged care? It's Janine, it's John. So people, when you position yourself that way and you market yourself that way, people see you as a trusted expert in that particular field.
Yeah. But how do you, because a lot of agents I've met over the years, they want the instant sale. Like, you know, they're looking for, well, this is why lead generators exist, right? Like, you need more leads. And so maybe you go buy them or something like that because I don't know, is it a lack of patience maybe? How do you coach agents to handle that psychology of staying patient when they're investing months into a relationship that, you know, might not convert in 9 months, it might convert in 2 years? Like, how do you get them to hold the line?
It's a great question. And it's, I think you've got to run two businesses. You need to run that database long-term, nurturing your past buyers, sellers, whatever it is, which can be a 10-year game. And, you know, we all know this is a marathon, not a sprint. On the flip side, I don't discourage agents to chase the low-hanging fruit. And for me, I always say, look, if you've got three current listings and you've got limited time, that time should be spent milking everything you can out of those current listings. So doing your just listed, doing your just solds, whether letter drops or emails or SMSs, you know, calling the neighbours, letting them know that there's a listing and a sale, because most activities happen around current listings and sales. So I say to agents, work those listings when you've got them, but then once you've expired that and milked it for every single thing you can, then go back to your database, pick up where you left off and work those long-term clients. You get another listing and sale, again, work hard on those, punch those through. So I'm not saying you do one instead of the other, but there's a space where both exist.
Do you have a story or something like that that you could share where you had to play the long game and really wait it out for a listing? There's probably plenty.
Oh, there'd be hundreds because the majority of listings and sales that I made were relationship-based. And it might be someone, okay, so I say this, right? So out of if I've got a patch of 3,000 homes, I'm just going back to when, let's call it my peak, which was 2018, you know, there were 80 sales that year. Yeah, I've got 3,000 people in there. I would say that 30% of my listings in my peak years were within my patch. But I would also say that 70 or 80% of the listings I got were outside of the patch, but because of the patch, right? So what I'm talking about is I've got John and Mary in my patch. I've nurtured them so hard that John and Mary's mum and dad or parents have now passed away or gone to aged care. They live a 15-minute drive outside of our patch. We list that property. So for me, it's not just those 3,000 within the patch, but it's about building those relationships, getting referrals, getting repeat business. And I would, I would say 70 or 80% of the business I got were outside of my patch, but because of the activity that we did within the patch.
Yeah, interesting. And so now you've moved into coaching, you know, we were talking about, you know, the difference in coaches in the industry, you know, and I think there are volume coaches out there. And then there's you who sort of handles like half a dozen clients. What made you choose to go down the path of, you know, doing just a small number like that instead of sort of going for the, you know, maybe the Tom Ferry approach or something like that?
Okay, I'll tell you. So I get a great deal of satisfaction out of working with someone and seeing them progress to another level or helping them go to where they want to go. And when I was working with Bell, I was there in two capacities. I was head of Victoria, but I was also running the training academy nationally. And so I was looking after literally thousands of people. So Sam, I would be on a plane. I'd be going to Bondi from Victoria, working with a team in Bondi. They say, well, we want to get better at database management. We want to get better at negotiation, fees, whatever. But I was working with so many people that I'd see them one day and then be there 2 months later. And I just found I had very little impact. because I just didn't spend enough time with those people. And what I realized was that I didn't want to be a volume coach and trainer or advisor. So most of my work now with clients is doing a 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, 12 month contract or ongoing work with them, where I can actually get into their office, you know, lift up the hood, look what's underneath, work with the staff, the team in there, whether it's at corporate level or director level, and really work, I guess, from a bird's eye view, looking down and looking at the business and how the business works. And there's not many consultants that work in that space. So for me, working with five or six clients at a time on a rotation, I feel close with them. I feel connected with them. I know their kids' names. I know their troubles in their life. They call me and they say, Adam, we had a pretty shit week and this happened in my personal life, so I haven't done that. And, you know, I'm very involved with that. And that's really what gets me out of bed, rather than just ticking a box with high volume.
Yeah, it's sort of, it's very aligned to what you're actually teaching, I think. You know, like, that's what occurs to me, is that, you know, instead of sort of going the scattergun out there, like, get to know and nurture a small group of people, and it makes for a good business.
Yeah, yeah. And I have much greater impact on them, because I'm not just giving them some theory that they may or may not implement. I'm getting involved with them. So I'm seeing them the next week, the following week, and they're saying, well, you know, I've done this step now, and now I'm at step B and step C and step D. So I'm walking through the steps with them until they achieve what they want to achieve. Now, if I just gave them some theory, stepped aside and hope they did it, it's not that easy. So I really work through that. And then once we've achieved that particular project or goal, we then work out, okay, well, am I stepping on, or do we want to do more together?
Yeah. What about community involvement? Like, I know that, you know, community involvement's usually a pretty big deal in, you know, what an agent does. How does that sort of sit alongside, you know, the warm nurturing programs that you teach?
Yeah, so if you're talking about community involvement in terms of sponsoring sporting clubs and getting involved with different groups, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I feel that agents lose a lot of money. And what I'm talking about is, I see many, many agents sponsor the local netball club, footy club. They throw money at the club, but they have very little personal involvement. And most of them, you know, they put up a sign at a sporting club, and I actually don't believe you get any return. So I think that getting involved is fantastic, but you need to be involved. You need to be at the awards nights. You need to be a member of the club. And you need to let people know that you're an agent and that you want business. It's amazing how few agents actually let people know that they want business. So, you know, putting up signage and stuff like that, throwing money, to me, I don't know, I've seen agents wasting thousands and thousands of dollars a year by doing that. So being involved in community, fantastic. Let people know you want business. You got to tell them.
Yeah, absolutely. During your career, you've obviously weathered multiple property cycles. We're still sort of going through ups and downs and things like that post-COVID. How did having more of a relationship-focused approach help you navigate those downturns versus the agents that, you know, kind of relied on quick wins?
Mm.
And what do you tell your coaching clients about that?
Yeah, so I think that agents that don't nurture long term and are focused on quick wins and where's the next listing coming from, I think it's a very stressful way of running your business, because it's so unpredictable. But I also think you're very much at the mercy of the market if you're working day to day. And when the market goes up, and I mean, I see it all the time, you know, the market goes up 10%, the agent's income goes up 10%, it goes down 20%, their income goes down 20%. It's almost exactly relative to market conditions. So I would say, if you don't want to be at the mercy of the market and you want a more consistent business, nurture those people long term, build those relationships, and you'll see it's more of a flat line rather than being like this, which to me is a very, very difficult way of running a business. It becomes a lot more consistent.
Yeah. And so we touched on it briefly earlier, but how do you see something like AI fitting into relationship-based real estate? Like, what would you like to see for agents out there that, you know, because obviously, you know, I had a bit of a joke about it, but I think AI is here to stay and progress always wins. So how do you think agents can take advantage of that?
Well, I think certainly in the information that we can gather We talked about market reports before, how easy it is to get information from REA or CoreLogic, literally cut and paste and create newsletters. But I think also, and I'm just looking into this, and Sam, you know, I know that you're an absolute expert on this stuff, but, you know, to be able to nurture your database, categorize properties to people, but then use AI tools to break down that even further in terms of what sort of person is it, what are their interests, you know, what makes them tick. I know there's AI now that, again, this is just starting for me, so I'm just learning this stuff, but, you know, using AI and algorithms to work out, well, when's someone more likely or most likely to transact. So I think that developing those tools, and I know that you spend a lot of time with agents, Sam, on this sort of stuff, just to give you clues, I guess, on where the next lead's coming from.
Can we dive into a little bit about the database categorization strategy? So from A to AA to AAA, how does a lead sort of move along that spectrum for you?
Yeah, okay. So look, I think most agents, when they run a database, they categorize people as hot, warm, and cold, and which is a great thing to do. And hot, warm, and cold, and most agents have a system like that. Hot, warm, and cold is how quickly they're going to transact. You know, hot, like we said earlier, might be 1 to 3 months, warm, cold, further away. What I help agents with, and what I did very well with the database, is that I categorize people in terms of my relationship with them. So I categorize them either as an A, a AA, AAA, or advocate. An advocate is, and I'll just give you some numbers, out of 4,000 people, I might have 50 advocates. 50 advocates are my best friends, my closest people, my solicitor, my accountant, people who I'm very close with. People who, if I was to have a function and 50 people are getting invited to this function that costs a lot of money, these are the people that get invited. If Sam, for instance, you're a person of high influence who I want to nurture on a high level, and you are a person of influence in our industry, I might categorize you as an advocate or a AAA. A AAA client for me, outside of someone of influence, is someone who might have had 3 or 4 transactions with me, and they're very important to me. So they might be categorized as a AAA. So when I say categorize, I'm talking about categories or tags, depending on which database system you use, but they all do it. A AA and single A, the relationship's not as strong. Now, how I communicate with people depends on the strength of my relationship. You know, we talked about market reports earlier. What I used to do is I used to print up a market report on very high quality, thick gloss paper and create a very good market report and post it out to my advocates. I also used to post out to my AAAs, but it would be slightly cheaper paper, still look for like a high quality document, but that would go out to my AAAs. Now, my AAAs and advocates, so my AAAs is about 10% of my database. So with my advocates as well, about 15% of my database are AAAs and advocates. The rest are AAAs who I might have sold to once, and an A who I don't have any strong relationship. The A's and AAAs might be getting our market report via an email or via a link for SMS, but they're not getting posted that information. I can't afford the time nor the money to be able to post to every single person, 4,000 people every single month. So once we categorize the different relationships, we can communicate with them differently.
How much do you think that, you know, like an agent today should be spending on marketing? Like if you're nurturing 1,000 people, what sort of percentage of your income should you be investing back into marketing?
Yeah, I think it's more of a percentage, but I think that, look, I think a rule of thumb, if you're looking at investing 5% of your net income back into marketing, I think that's probably really a minimum. But for me, it's not a matter of the dollar spend when I think about it. It's more about the quality. And I think I've spoken to you before, you know, our newsletters that we used to actually get sponsored. So because we had such high quality data in Elsternwick, and had 90% of the suburb in Elsternwick in there, you know, we would then go to a new business, a new cafe, saying, well, how would you like us to promote your business, you know, across every single Elsternwick resident, which they can't do because they haven't got access to the information. They'd say, yeah, absolutely no brainer. So they would actually potentially, you know, pay a sponsorship to have some advertising in that newsletter, and they would actually cover the cost of the newsletter. So, yeah, for me, it's not always about money. Sometimes you can be a bit clever, get some sponsorship in. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's done by email, which really doesn't cost. But, you know, I would sooner spend, you know, $20,000 on a on an assistant part time or an offshore assistant than putting $20,000 into social and nurturing people who I've got that relationship existing.
Yeah, well, I think that's a cracking strategy, actually, getting sponsorship for your newsletter, because if you had 4,000 people on your newsletter, to a local business, they're all leads, and so surely, you know, like I think like a publisher, you know, like if you could build your database into a really clean email list, and then sell sponsorships, that would almost pay for your marketing, but. That's me thinking like a publisher. Is that even possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, imagine you going to the local cafe and saying, well, and I used to take actually target new businesses. So I'd go to a new cafe that's opened up and say, well, you know, no one in Elswick knows you. You know, I've got 90% of the suburb in my database. Let us shoot some communication out. I'll say something in there like, you know, make sure you order the croissants. They're amazing. And I think for them, what I used to do is say, look, offer a free coffee or something, because I think that there's, you get a lot more legs, a lot more value if the client's actually getting something. So present this voucher and get a free coffee. Now, if they contribute $1,000 or $2,000 to get their name out there, I mean, for them, it's a no-brainer. You know, it's absolutely incredible value for them.
Yeah, and less spammy than Facebook too, I reckon.
Exactly right, yeah.
So let's look into the future now, like, but 5 years from now, 2030. What do you think real estate looks like in 5 years' time?
I think there'll be more independent real estate agents. I think we're heading that way. I actually looked at some stats yesterday, and EXP International are now in the top five agencies in the world. Don't quote me on this, but because I did get the information from chat. But something like they're in the top five agents in the world by agent count now. And the EXP models or models like that, where agents are working as their own brand, rather than working for a franchise or another brand, giving 50% of their income away to the business that they're working for. I know that's becoming more and more popular in Australia. I think that in 5 years, working for yourself under a banner like that is going to be the way that the vast majority of agents will be working like that, I think.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, you know, I think now, like I did some work a little while ago that consumers will be going to ChatGPT and saying, who's the best agent in my area? And it'll come up with top five agents based on, you know, like it'll be based on whatever the algorithm says on that day, I think. So I think you've either, A, you've got to have created a heap of content, or B, you've got to have listened to Adam Joski on the Thought Leaders podcast and be nurturing your database so hard that, you know, that they don't go to ChatGPT to ask who's the best agent.
Do you reckon, Sam, just bouncing a question back to you, but how many homeowners now are using chat to find agents or to research agents? Or so when I say chat, I'm talking about any AI, but where's that going to be in 5 years?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, AI will definitely be selecting agents for people in five, you know, like even for me, like I didn't know who should sell my place here because all of the letterbox things look the same. So I just went straight to ChatGPT. And oddly, you know, even Sam Altman has said, you know, weirdly, and he says it's weird, people trust ChatGPT. So I don't have any stats on that at the moment, but I do know that per capita, Australia are some of the biggest users of ChatGPT.
Really?
Most, you know, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm addicted.
It's not just, I mean, obviously I'm adding to the stats, but, you know, like I can't be adding them. But anyway, yes, I mean, such interesting times. But all right, so let's get to some actionable, like what is, you know, if there's some people here that are listening that think, all right, so, you know, my alternatives are SEO the crap out of myself or go down this path of nurturing my clients so they don't have to think about finding an agent through ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
What is the first step that someone should take? Like, you know, like what do you think is the, you know, the first step in coming up with a decent nurture plan?
Yeah. Okay. So number one that we work on with our clients is we get them to spend weeks thinking about every single person that they know who owns a property in their service area. And invariably, most people pull out a list of 200 or 300 to start with, and these are people who they know. There could be, you know, relatives, friends, parents at the kids' school. But your, you know, first point is to Let's start nurturing the people that we've already got relationships with. Let's get them into the database. Let's tag them or categorize them in terms of how our relationship is. Are they an A relationship? Are they a triple A relationship? Let's put the property details into the database. What sort of property have they got? What sort of interests have they got? Are they interested in sports? Are they interested in music? Let's put those people in first, start communicating with those people, because they're the people, rather than chasing listings that are cold, you're much stronger chance of getting a listing if you've got that stronger relationship already. Once you've done that and worked the people that you know, it's really a case of going through the suburb in its entirety. If that's what where you want to work, or if you want to, you know, work aged care or whatever, it's a matter of, you know, using the tools that are available, and I can help anyone on finding the information, how to find it and get it in there. But, you know, establishing what's the area you want to focus on and be that expert, and then getting that information into the database.
Yeah, well, that's, I'm sure we'll leave some links in the show notes to how people can get in touch with you, and they'll have to contact you to see if you've got a spot to get into. Thank you for joining me on the Thought Leaders podcast. It's sort of, this is a topic that's actually quite close to my heart, because I think nurturing sort of beats going and looking for new leads every month, which, as you say, is quite stressful. So thank you for coming and sharing some of your wisdom. If there's one thing that you want to leave people with, what would it be?
If you haven't got a good nurture program now, start now. I mean, I was selling, I know you said 25 years, it was actually probably 30, 32 years. My biggest regret in real estate is that I'd created raving fans early in my day and lost contact with them. And to me, that whole entire transaction, bar the money I got out of it, was a complete waste of time when I could have utilized those relationships and done so much more with them. And I think that those first 5 years where I didn't do this very well, if I had nurtured all those relationships, put them into a database and had a program ongoing, I reckon probably would have got me an extra 5 to 10 listings a year ongoing. You know, exponentially that grows. So my advice is, if you're not doing it, start doing it today. Stop looking for new people. Work the people that you've already got that love you and respect you and trust you.
Yeah, that's great advice. Adam Joske, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Samantha.